Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Mark Brown. Mark is an educational leader, leadership and team development facilitator, author, speaker, coach, student and mental health and wellness advocate. He is known for his passion and dedication for inspiring others to choose to be you by living life as their best self. Mark serves as a high school administrator in Newburgh, Oregon, where his primary focus and responsibility is centered around school climate and culture. Mark shares openly about his life experience and how the highs and lows throughout his life have molded him into who he is today. His goal is to use his experience to encourage others to face their fears and challenges head on and to learn to love themselves for who they are. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I am still crawling out each and every day. But for me in my life, so I, by nature, I'm a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, I think a lot of the time that puts me in a tough position because as a leader, I have to make a lot of decisions. And oftentimes those are difficult decisions. And one thing I quickly learned in leadership is no matter which decision I make, there's going to be someone who doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. And for me as a people pleaser, that's been challenging. I think part of my being a people pleaser is I also struggle with anorexia. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is a very real part of my life. And although, you know, you hear about anorexia and someone who's anorexic and you think, oh, that's just a challenge they face with eating and food, mm-hmm. and their body image and appearance. And yes, that is all very true, but that also impacts other areas of my life. And it impacts my job and my performance, mm-hmm. and the decisions that I make, because anorexia, what I've learned through the counseling and the therapy that I've gone through, is it's not just about the food and it's not just about the eating and the physical appearance. That's just where it kind of manifests itself. Mm-hmm. But then it spills over and leaks over into a lot of other areas of my life. And it controls a lot of my thoughts and a lot of my behaviors. And for a long time as an educator, I think I was in the trenches, kind of consumed by my anorexia, even though it wasn't maybe living itself out in front of everything. And, you know, it wasn't maybe super visual always to me or to other people, but it really kind of, it kept me from being who I wanted to be and who I needed to be for my colleagues, for my staff, and for my students. And so, you know, over the past 10, 11 years in education, as a educator, as a classroom teacher, as a coach, and as an administrator, I think for a long time, I was kind of in the trenches, consumed by my desire to always please people. And what happened with that was I wasn't ever able to be my true and my best self because I was trying to present myself in a way that I thought other people, they wanted to see, or, mm-hmm. you know, present someone in a product that they would approve of. And oftentimes that kept me from being honest with myself, but then almost also honest with other people. And so I don't think I've fully climbed out of the trenches. I think I'm mm-hmm. continuing to climb out of the trenches because it's a daily battle. And one thing I've learned, you know, with mental health and mental illness is I'm never going to get to that point where I can say I'm healed. It's not necessarily like a physical ailment that, you know, you give it some antibiotics, you give it some treatment, and all of a sudden it's gone. It's always going to be a part of my life. But I'm learning each and every day how to not let it have control over me and how to not let it change who I am at my core, mm-hmm. Which means I just have to make intentional decisions around making sure that I acknowledge that it's there, but then I make decisions about how to make sure I don't let it prevent me from being who I want to be, who I need to be, and who others deserve for me to be. So I think that's my still coming out of the trenches mm-hmm, example mm-hmm. of my life.
No, but you frame it so well in just that, you know, you're continuing to learn and you're continuing to become that person that you want to be. So, you know, we all view trenches a different way, right? And you're like you said, you're never necessarily going to be completely healed, but you're learning, you're, you know, living with you know, continuing to change and be better. So I think that's really inspiring. Tell me a little bit about how your journey from a high school and being a student in high school and college kind of led you to where you are now as a high school assistant principal.
Yeah, so I climbed the ladder really quickly. I'm pretty young still. And, you know, a lot of that was done maybe with not the healthiest of intentions, because I felt like the more titles I added to my resume, or, you know, I talk about, you know, the title I had on the door of my office, that's what made me important. And that's what made me valuable. And that's what gave me worth and credibility. And so I worked really, really hard as a young administrator to climb the ladder. And I did that. I became a varsity head coach of a 6A high school by the time I was, I think, 24, 25. Mm-hmm. I became a high school administrator before I was 30. And things were really good for me on paper. But it all came at a cost. And, you know, what I've learned through this is I think I'm in the right spot right now. I'm where I'm supposed to be. And the position that I'm in right now has created a lot of opportunities for me to, I think, and I hope, have a positive influence on the people that I work with and the people that I lead. But what I've learned is leadership is not about the title you have. It's about mm-hmm. the actions that you take. And, you know, a lot of the times we all like to sign our signature with whatever our title is. Or one of the first things you do when you, you know, hear about a keynote speaker is you, oh, well, what title do they hold? What's their position at their in their school district? And for me, I'm really learning it's not about the title that I hold. It's not about what people think I am or think I do. It's about who I actually am. And if I want to be a real authentic leader, it's about the actions that I take each and every day with the individuals that I work with. And so that's really been good for me through my therapy and my coming out of the trenches. It's really helped me identify that I shouldn't put my energy and focus into continuing to try to climb the ladder and add more titles, because if I'm a good leader, those things will come. Mm-hmm. And if my target is getting to that point in life, then I'm always going to want something more. And I'm never going to feel fulfilled and never going to feel worthwhile, because there's always something more, which means I'm not good enough yet, if that's my mindset. Mm-hmm. And if I shift and I pivot my mindset to focusing 100% of my energy on doing the best job that I can for the people that I work with, the people that I serve, mm-hmm. then, you know, if I'm doing a good job, the next opportunity is going to come. But what's important is what I do right here, right now, today, with those that I work with. And so that's been a really good kind of learning process for me, and really helped me, I think, become a much better educator, much better leader in how it shifted my focus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And have you been in your current position for several years now?
This is my third year in this mm-hmm. specific position.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's so important to just, you know, remember, instead of chasing a title, right, that we, you know, need to focus on doing the best we can in our current job, right? Because it's not necessarily the title. It's how we treat others, how we serve, what we do in that job. So, you know, I think you said it so well.
I actually talk about that in my book. I have a chapter titled Chasing Titles. And it's this idea of this pivot from me where, for a long time, I chased my own titles, mm-hmm. whereas I'm learning as a leader, my job is to chase the titles of mm-hmm. those that I lead. And if the people that I lead, if they are successful, mm-hmm. that means that's probably a product of me pouring 100% of my energy into them mm-hmm. and not into my own gain and my own pursuit. So that's been a really good shift and realization for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was interested in finding out a little bit about your work as an assistant principal with high schoolers, and your school has been completely virtual so far this school year. And, you know, how are you relating to some of those students and reaching out to them? And you talked a little bit in the pre-chat about attendance has remained pretty, pretty good, but there's been a lot of lack of student engagement. And as we know, you know, high schoolers are pretty much hard to get to attend and, you know, be engaged in those virtual classrooms. So share a little bit about some of the things that you've learned over this remote learning period.
Yeah, you know, if we're really just looking at the data of the strict attendance data of mm-hmm. whether you're here, whether you're not, our data really hasn't changed. And our mm-hmm. attendance rates really haven't been impacted by moving from the in-person to the distance learning school model. What we have really noticed is the level of engagement has significantly dropped off. And so I think that's been a kind of an aha moment for us in trying to shift our focus. You know, when we're in person in the physical building, it's all about getting kids in the physical classroom and getting them out of the halls and getting them onto campus. And if we get mm-hmm. them to campus, then we feel like we can, you know, be successful with them. And so that's the big battle. Right now we're getting them to log in. They're attending, quote unquote, attending, but it's a lot easier for them to disengage mm-hmm. because, you know, if I'm just sitting behind a screen and I can turn my camera off, then yeah, I'm there, but I don't necessarily have to do anything. And so we've shifted away our focus from just trying to get them there to trying to figure out, how do we get them engaged? How do we get them mm-hmm. connected? Not direct connection, but actually to choose to connect with the schoolwork. And so we actually saw that, and about halfway through the first quarter, we started to do empathy interviews with all of our students. And we have about 1,400, anywhere between 1,300 and 1,400 students in our high school. Mm-hmm. And every single student got a one-on-one empathy interview with a faculty member. Mm-hmm. And that was super powerful. Because when you're in a class of even, you know, a small class of 15, it's easy to sit there and do nothing. But when mm-hmm. you're one-on-one, you have to engage. You know, I think students really appreciated it. We got really good feedback from parents and students about that. But one of the things that I think it helped me and helped all of our faculty understand is every single one of our students has a story mm-hmm. and they all have something that they're dealing with. And there's not a one size fits all answer mm-hmm. to why students aren't engaging. And so I think it's really helped us understand that we need to approach every single student in an individual way. And, you know, I think that's a great, that's obviously something we want to say we do really well as a school, but it's hard because it takes time. And, you know, it takes a lot of intentionality and a lot of effort, but it really kind of brought that to light that every single kid is dealing with something different, a different, you know, personal issue, their own mental health challenges, struggles mm-hmm. that they've never dealt with before, that COVID and this isolation and staying at home has all of a sudden brought up in their life. Or they all have different home issues and family structure challenges that create barriers. And so it's shifted us away from, I guess, you know, blaming kids for why they're not showing up or why they're not engaging mm-hmm. to really changing our focus to, okay, how can we help break down the barriers? How can we help support them? How can we help them find ways to engage? So it's been really good in helping us do a better job of that as a staff.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the ahas that your staff has found maybe are ways of getting them more engaged as opposed to the why? Since you said you kind of found this out halfway through for the first quarter. So maybe for the past month or so, what have you all taken a different approach maybe to the student engagement?
Yeah, so we're doing some different things. You know, we're on the Google platform. And so Google, within Google Meets recently, released the Google Breakout Rooms. Mm-hmm. And that's been really good because all of a sudden it's not just kind of that sit and get where mm-hmm. the teacher is doing the instruction and I'm just sitting there for an hour listening and then I get my work and I go off and do it by myself. Mm-hmm. When we can put them in those small groups within those breakout rooms and get some real student discussion, student conversation, dialogue, collaboration going, it's like the students come alive. Mm-hmm. And the feedback we've gotten since we started to do that, you know, the students are like, can we do breakout rooms more? Can we do that? We like it. We enjoy it. And so that's been really good. It's kind of, you know, it goes back to more of what we've tried to do with our in-person teaching model of mm-hmm. like, you know, it shouldn't be teacher directed. It should be student directed. Yeah. And, you know, we as the educator, we're the facilitators of their learning. And so I think early on in distance learning, we didn't do that because we didn't know what tools, resources maybe were available and how to manage that. And so we kind of went back to that old school model of, you know, sit and get. but we've started to transition that. The more we can get kids, what we've learned is if we provide opportunities and give students an opportunity to talk and engage, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. We just have to get creative in finding those opportunities and providing those opportunities for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you as the assistant principal, are you going into some of these breakout rooms and just observing these student conversations? And, you know, they're pretty rich conversations, you're saying, and they have that opportunity to then speak about whatever the topic is and engage a lot more, you're saying.
Yeah, you know, I enjoy making a quick guest appearance, popping into a Google Meet. But one of the best things for me is I actually, this year, I'm teaching a class. We brought back kind of homeroom advisory. Uh-huh. We call it Tiger Time. We're the Newburgh Tigers, and so we call it our Tiger Time group. And we had gotten rid of it a couple years ago. And then finally this year, we saw a huge need because obviously, you know, social emotional learning mm-hmm. and making, you know, direct connections are super important. So we brought that back, and all of us admin, we even took one because we were like, I need to be around students. If I wasn't teaching that, I would have very little student interaction because I'm not able to just walk the halls and supervise at lunchtime. And so it's selfishly, it's created a really cool opportunity for me where I have my own group of students. But what I've learned is if I try to dominate the conversation, it's really easy for me to dominate the conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kids will sit there quietly, really respectfully, especially, you know, in this virtual setting, they just don't unmute themselves. And I can talk all day long, but it's been really good once I've learned to shut my mouth and, you know, ask leading questions or prompts, or, you know, if I ask them for their opinion, kids will give you their opinion. Mm-hmm. And so the more I listen, like I continue to be overwhelmed and just inspired by the authenticity of our students. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just a good reminder, when I get out of the way, good things happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's been good.
Yeah, that's so great to hear that they're, you know, they're being authentic and they're feeling like, you know, they can share these things with you. And, you know, the fact that everybody is assigned a advisory class is so important because, as you're saying, you know, you're not walking the halls, you're not trying to plan a fire drill, right? and some of the other things that, you know, pop up with admin and, you know, being able to have that group of students. And how often are you meeting with your advisory students per week?
Twice a week. We do it every Monday and Wednesday. We're kind of on a block schedule this year with our distance learning. And so it's on our A days. So we have it Monday, Wednesday.
Great. Great. Well, tell me a little bit about some of the workshops and motivational talks and keynotes that you have coming up. You talked a little bit about some virtual keynotes this past week. And, you know, let's talk about some of the things that you have coming up in the spring and maybe over the summer and what you often talk about during those keynotes.
Yeah, so it's been kind of fun. I've got to virtually travel and still get to spread my message. Last week, I was up in Canada. Giving the keynote up in Canada, but I was still at home that night for dinner with my girl. So it was kind of cool. But yeah, I'm humbled anytime I get the opportunity to speak. I've got a couple schools I'm working with, doing some consulting with how to help them bring the conversation around mental health awareness, mm-hmm. and, you know, looking out for myself and supporting those around me in regards to mental health, how to bring that conversation to life on their campus, both among their staff faculty as well as amongst their students. So that's kind of fun, getting to help walk alongside building leaders, school leaders, and navigate, you know, it's different in every school and there's not a one size fits all model. And so it's really figuring out what's the story of their school, the makeup of their school, and then what are the challenges that they maybe are seeing and experiencing, and then how can we help overcome those barriers and those challenges and break down those walls and help start that conversation. Cause that's really my goal, is mm-hmm. to be a conversation starter. I'm not a mental health expert. I don't claim to be, mm-hmm. I don't want to be, I don't spend my time and energy doing all the research and studying to be a mental health expert. My goal is to be a mental health conversation starter. Because for a long time in my life, the conversation around mental health was non-existent, and that was a taboo topic and something that only people that had problems, they're the only ones that talk about mental health, right? Yeah. Whereas I've learned we all have mental health, and a lot of people that means we have really good mental health, And that's a good thing. That's something that should be celebrated. And so wherever you're at on the spectrum of mental health, if you have some challenges or if things are good for you, we need to be talking about it. And just like we spend so much money and so much time and energy focusing on our physical health, I think we need to do a better job of starting to put that same energy and effort and investment into our mental health. And so I do that through virtual keynotes, through some consulting work with schools. I have my book that's out there. And so that's provided a lot of good opportunities for follow-up conversations with people. One conference coming up this next summer that I'm really excited about is the Maslow Before Bloom Conference, led by Brian Perlman and his group out there in Missouri. So super excited for hopefully that opportunity that we're able to do that in person, that COVID and all of this gets kind of under control and goes away. I just want all this to go away so we can get back to those good learning opportunities and bring people together who are like-minded, who want to continue to get better in regards to starting the conversation around mental health. So that's one that's definitely on my radar that I'm crossing my fingers. I hope we get to do in person, but obviously we got to be safe and make sure we don't do anything to put anyone at risk.
Yeah, and I had also joined that Facebook group. That is a Facebook group, correct, that you're referring to, the Maslow Before Bloom. So I'd seen something about it and, just came out recently, advertisements about the conference. And do you know the dates offhand?
Oh, my goodness. It's like July 21, 22, right around there. I can't remember. I could look at my calendar. But, about the third week of July, it's a two-day conference. It's going to be really good. Some really good speakers. Both keynotes and then some breakout sessions lined up. So it'll be a good one for sure.
Yeah. And that's that first annual conference, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's definitely something, they talked about this in the spring, Maslow Before Bloom, but actually having a conference focusing on this and focusing on how we can really make that shift in education now with, concentrating on not only the mental health of our students, but also the mental health of staff members. So talk to me a little bit about just some of the tips that you would give other administrators who are trying to support staff members, and especially when staff members aren't in the building maybe are a little bit, not so easy to kind of open up when they're having issues and think they can do it all themselves. So what would you say to those administrators who are worried about staff members?
Yeah, so this is actually one thing I noticed really early on in when we, the shutdown happened and we went to distance learning. We started pumping a lot of resources at educators for how to take care of students and how to be aware of students who might be facing new challenges and struggling with mental health. But we didn't do a very good job of initially educating educators on how to take care of themselves. And, we've all heard the old sayings, you can't pour from an empty glass and those types of things, put your own oxygen mask on first, those types of sayings. But we haven't, I don't think, done a great job of actually embracing that mentality and that idea. And so I've really shifted a lot of my energy and focus on helping educators learn to first take care of themselves. Because we do have, I believe, the most important job in the world as educators and taking care of our kids and mentoring our students and helping them grow and learn. But we can't do that. And this is one thing I talk a lot about with my own journey. I can't do that for others if I'm not first making sure that I'm in a good spot and if I'm not making sure I'm in a good place. And so one of the things I really encourage all educators to do is find an accountability partner. Find someone who you can connect with, not on a professional level, but on a personal level. And hopefully it's someone outside of your immediate family, outside of your class or outside of your home, someone who you can have a raw, authentic conversation with. Because a lot of the times I think we misunderstand, we think of self-care and we think that it's something that's supposed to be done just for ourselves and in isolation. And I think that's absolutely not the case. Self-care is not meant to be done alone. Yes, it's focused on me, but I don't have all the answers. And so I need help and I need support. And I think that leads to another point that I really try to make loud and clear when I get the opportunity to speak is this idea that asking for help is a sign of weakness is something that I absolutely want to get rid of that mentality and that thought, because I think that asking for help is one of the most courageous things an individual can do, because it takes us to a place of vulnerability. It takes us to a place in our lives where we admit that by myself, I'm not enough. And that's okay. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. That doesn't mean you're not good enough. It means you're human and we all need help. And so we need to get rid of this idea that if I'm asking for help, it means I'm not good enough. It's the sign of weakness. And I think it's an absolute sign of strength and courage and someone who's being responsible. And so I really encourage people, find that accountability partner, reach out for help and don't be scared. Don't demean yourself. Don't feel like it means that there's something wrong with you or not good enough. No, it means you acknowledge, I can't do this alone. We as humans are innately designed for connection. We are hardwired for connection with other people. And when we don't have that, we start to experience challenges and struggles and things that we are not used to. And I think right now with the closure and COVID, those things have been brought to the surface and really been exposed. And so now more than ever, we need to be intentionally reaching out. And that's hard because a lot of the times those connection points are kind of just natural and they happen by chance just because we're in a building together, right, on campus. And we don't have to be super intentional about them, but now we do. And so find that accountability partner, schedule out these things in your day, schedule time, put it on your calendar, your Google calendar, wherever you keep your calendar, put it on there that I'm going to check in with my accountability partner, or I'm going to go take a walk, and actually put it on your calendar, because I think it's easy for us to sit at home in the comfort of our home and just kind of get lost behind the computer and, you know, just go through the motions of distance learning. Whereas we need to be intentional with how we schedule our time and how we make sure we're pausing to engage in that self-care.
Yeah, those are such great tips. And, you know, that's one thing I really hadn't heard all these months is that accountability partner piece, right? Because, you know, just as if you were training for a marathon, you want somebody who, you know, maybe not necessarily will run with you, but will keep you accountable to the training plan. But when you're, you know, teaching from home and, you know, not taking breaks and those type of things, having somebody that will check in and make sure that you're getting up out of your seat and, you know, taking some time, whatever that looks like for you, I think is so important, right? So, tell me a little bit about what you wish you would have done differently as a young educator.
I wish I would have been me. You know, as a young educator, I tried so hard to create this image of the cool, hip, young educator who had all the tips and tricks and all the right ideas. And I tried to be, I saw other educators who I thought were good, successful educators, and I tried to emulate them too much, you know, to a fault. And it got in the way of me just being me. I wish I would have asked for help more. I wish, you know, when I had, that idea of if I was asking for help, it meant I wasn't a good enough educator. I had that in my head. And so I tried to problem solve everything by myself, and I avoided some things that presented as challenges because, well, I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't know how to deal with it, and I didn't want to ask for help. So I kind of skirted around it. And I wish I just would have done a better job of intentionally asking for help as a young educator and then being confident in me. And even if that meant I didn't have the perfect lesson plan or I made some mistakes in my lesson plannings, that's okay. I think I probably missed a lot of opportunities for authentic connections because I wasn't being authentically me. And so I wish, I'm not great at it today. You know, I still struggle with that as a people pleaser. And because of other challenges that I face with my mental health, that's something every day that I have to confront and I have to, you know, work to be better at. But I wish I just would have got out of my own way and allowed myself to be me.
Yeah. If you have the opportunity to, you know, just visit your younger self and, you know, we always think about what we could have done better. And I think that's a great exercise in just so that self-growth process. Right. And that helps you, you know, be better in your current position. And, you know, you've become more authentic throughout the years and especially with the release of your book and your keynotes and everything. Talk to me a little bit about, your stance on how educators like to control so many things, right? We need to focus more on things that we can control, whether rather than the outside things that aren't able to be controlled, such as the school closures.
Right. Yeah, I think that's something that I know I really struggle with. I'm a control freak, you know, part of being a people pleaser. I want to be in control. And if I can control the situation, if I control everything about the environment, then things are going to work out the way I want them to work out. And a lot of the time that's how I approach, you know, sometimes the work that I do or the situation that I'm in is I look for opportunities to be in control. And I think that's probably a lot of educators, you know, because educators are naturally, you know, leaders, and we are working, anytime you're working with people, I think we by default can look for opportunities to see what we can control and see, you know, how we can be in control of situations. And I've learned the more that I try to control everything, the less control I end up having. And I've really learned that I believe there are three things in my life that I get to control. I get to control my effort, I get to control my attitude, and I get to control how I treat other people. Everything else is outside of my control. And I actually have a poster above the door of my office, and it's the formula E plus R equals O. And it comes from an organization, Focus 3, but it's experiences happen to us. And a lot of those experiences are outside of my control. Things happen around me every single day that I had no control over, no part in, but it still happens to me. What's going to help me get to a pot, and with every experience, there's going to come an outcome, the O, right? But the part of the formula that I get to control is my response to that experience. And so when things happen outside of my control, I can respond by, and again, my response, I think, is centered in my effort, my attitude, and then how I treat other people who are involved in that experience. And if I focus on those three things, it's more likely that I'm going to get a more positive outcome. Doesn't mean I'm going to get a perfect outcome. Doesn't mean I'm going to get the outcome that I want, but there's a higher probability. And this is, I'm talking math here, and I'm not a math person at all. Look at this. But there's a higher probability that I'm going to get a more positive outcome. And when I remember to just focus on those three things, even when I get a negative outcome, I'm able to be at peace with the outcome because I controlled what I could control. I couldn't control the outcome. I could only control my response. And I'm able to sleep better. I'm able to walk away from the experience. Again, even if it didn't go the way I wanted it to, I'm able to have confidence and peace of mind in knowing that, you know what? I kept a great attitude. I kept a positive attitude, and I had an attitude of problem solving. And I gave my absolute best effort. I did everything that I could in a positive way, in the right way. And I treated those around me with respect. I treated them with kindness. I treated them, giving them the benefit of the doubt and listening to them. And even if it didn't go my way, at least I did those three things. So I really encourage people, it's okay to want to control things, but what matters is where we put the energy and effort into what we are able to control and focusing on the things that actually are within our control.
Yeah, it's such a important tool to live by, right? And something that I would have on my wall often is life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it, right? And I've often told students that, you know, would come into my office, you know, really upset and, you know, especially just, you know, when there's drama going on with peers and those type of things, just kind of, you know, it's your reaction. It's, you know, you can't control how others are going to act. You can't control, interactions with peers. We can't control, what's happening with the virus right now and other people's attitudes. Right. But we can control our reactions. We can control, right. Like you're saying, your response to the experience, right. Your response to, you know, how you're working with your students and making the best out of the current situation. That's so important for everybody to remember these days. Well, out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
You know, I got to go with my mantra of choose to be you. You're going to face highs and lows in life. You're going to face, you know, experiences where you're going to have to respond to them. You're going to have things happen to you outside of your control. But in everything you do, as you work with kids, as you focus on you and making sure that you're taking care of your mental health, choose to be you. And sometimes that means we have to embrace the fact that we need help. And sometimes that means that there are some areas of my life that I need to grow in and I need to get better in. And I need someone else to walk alongside me and support me in getting better in those areas. But that's okay. We are all a work in progress. Don't lie to yourself. Don't try to lie and trick other people into believing that you are something and someone other than who you actually are. And if people don't accept that about you and they don't like who you are, that's one of those things that's outside of your control. Mm-hmm. And what you, at the end of the day, you have to be able to look in the mirror and say, I did my absolute best with a great attitude. I gave my best effort in everything I did today. And I treated those around me with respect, with dignity and kindness. And I chose to be me. And I really, if we can all do that, mm-hmm. I just imagine what a world that would be. And it's hard. It's not easy. Yeah. I'm not great at it. I speak about it. I write a book about it. I'm still working on it, but it's a good reminder to me, and I hope it's been a reminder and a bit of encouragement to anyone who's listening to this.
Yeah, those are such great words to end by and think about as people go on with their day today. Where can people find you online and connect with you?
So I do have a website, heymarkbrown.com, so you can check that out. It tells you a little bit more about who I am and what I do. I'm also on social media on Twitter and Instagram at @HeyMarkBrown. So connect with me there. I am on Facebook if you want to try to find me there. But yeah, I'm not an expert. I'm just a conversation starter and I love conversation. So if anyone you want to connect and just have conversations about maybe ways that I could support you or help you or ideas you have, I love connecting with new people. So
well, it was such a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.